How's it going, everybody? Pete Jensen and Rob Reese back with you here on NHL Fantasy on Ice, continuing our season preview episodes, and we're rolling with Chris Meaney of the FTN Network, good friend of the show, and always brings it to the highest level. What's going on, Chris? Great to have you back.
Hey, Pete. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. It is the calendar has turned September, so it is hockey season, a quick off season, which I'm all about. And thanks for having me, man. Looking forward to this show.
Good to have you back, Chris. Welcome to the show. And just to get your quick thoughts here, there was a minor move over the weekend. Kotkaniemi obviously is now a member of the Carolina Hurricanes. He's a young player drafted third overall, obviously has the keeper league and dynasty ranking pedigree, which we're going to dissect today, but doesn't really live up to the bill so far in his NHL career. I know your experience with the Habs, you know the ins and outs. Do you think Kotkaniemi joining the Carolina Hurricanes has any keeper and dynasty league implications, Chris?
I thought he goes to Carolina, which is certainly a better team, and there's a lot of good players on that squad. I don't know if his value changes all that much. I think from a keeper in a dynasty league, maybe into year two or three, is Carolina going to bring back Vincent Trocheck, who's on the final year of his deal? How much more does Staal have left? So I don't know how he fits in as a center right away. And Carolina came out this past week and said he is going to start playing, you know, on the left side. So does that mean he plays on that second line with Trocheck and Natchez? Does he play on the first line at times with the Finnish boys and Aho and Teravainen? I think that's a possibility. But I thought in Montreal, he was actually going to have maybe his best chance to succeed as a guy who was going to play on the second line with some pretty good wingers. So now he goes over to Carolina. And, you know, I just don't know if he's going to be a guy that gets about 17, 18 minutes a game, which is something I projected for him in Montreal, which wasn't the case over the past couple seasons, playing on the third line with the Habs. So I think, honestly, he probably starts on that third line with a veteran like Staal. The left wing is going to be a new position for him. They tried it at times in Montreal. I think there was some growing pains there with it, and it's still probably going to be the case. But if he does find himself, you know, getting inside that top six where he does, you know, strive and succeed as a left winger, sure. I just don't see him on the first power play unit. I don't think that's going to happen in Carolina, but I think overall, you know, in a keeper and dynasty league, I think his value is pretty much the same. And from a redraft standpoint, I don't think he has too much to offer. There's going to be times where you guys are talking about him. Oh, he's slated on the second line. He's playing on the first line today. Oh, you know, grab him in DFS. He's going to be cheap. There's going to be opportunities like that. But overall, I don't think his value changes too much in a redraft standpoint. If anything, it's down, a little bit of a downgrade.
I think for Kotkaniemi, like deep sleeper, if you're in a bigger league, if you're in, of course, a longer term format, you're going to consider him. Because one thing that I was talking about with Robbie and what you mentioned already, just the fact that they went out there and said that he's going to be playing left wing narrows it down for you. And you know that, you know, worst case will be with Jordan Staal. Best case will be with Aho and either Teravainen or Nietzsche. And then, you know, somewhere in the middle is Trocheck, who's a big fantasy producer in many categories when he's healthy. So it's really like a much higher floor, I feel like, in Carolina. The ceiling, we have no idea what it is, guys, right? Like the ceiling could be fairly high if he ends up with Aho and it works well. I mean, I saw someone over the weekend was saying maybe you put like all the Finnish guys together. And in that case, I would really like the ceiling for Kotkaniemi. But one thing that I wanted to ask you before we get to the theme of this episode, Chris, with rookies and keepers, and that's why we brought these guys up at the top. Who do you like more for fantasy this coming year? Kotkaniemi, that kind of intrigue, the unknown, or maybe the safer bet in Christian Dvorak, who was brought in by Montreal to replace him and is likely going to be a top six center?
I think I lean with Christian Dvorak just because of the ice time and the right role that's solidified for him right off the hop. I mean, this is a guy in 5 years, I believe he scored 15 goals in four of the five, the one season that he didn't. He was, you know, rattled with some injuries. Now he played with some decent players in Arizona, you know, at times with Taylor Hall a little bit when he was really fantasy relevant. And then at times last year with Phil Kessel as well. But I look at him this year, probably Brendan Gallagher on his right side, a guy who drives a lot of offense, who can score goals. And then on the left side, maybe a Mike Hoffman in there as well. There's a lot that Montreal can do with their lines. I mean, they could have Jonathan Drouin if he shows up and is a guy who can play on that second line as well. I remember watching Christian Dvorak for the London Knights a few years ago. I mean, those rosters were absolutely loaded with Max Domi and Mitch Marner. He was back-to-back seasons with over 100 points. He does have some skill. I know a lot of people look at him as a two-way forward, but he can bring a little bit more offensively, I think, than a Philip Deneau, who played, you know, in that role and, you know, on this quote-unquote first line, but in a top six role. He'll get some power play time there as well. So there's a lot of question marks. You just mentioned with Jasperi Kotkaniemi, right? Where is he going to play? Where is he going to slot in? Can he handle, you know, playing on the left side? Still got, you know, Niederreiter on that squad. It's very deep. So Christian Dvorak is a guy that I think will probably flirt with 19 minutes per game and maybe get top power play unit time, but most likely on the second unit. So I'd lean with him, but both of those guys are, I think, are decent mid to late round flyers.
I think it segues us into a good point here. General themes in a keeper and dynasty league, you need to know the role that these young players are going to play. And I love what you said about Dvorak, where that has the security of getting that high ice time. Whenever I'm drafting somebody, I love to see 15 plus minutes per game. Now, to Kotkaniemi's point, I think the ceiling's still higher. I think he could emerge into something special, but that is a training camp play. You cannot be going out right now drafting Kotkaniemi in either a regular league or keeper and dynasty and put any big stock into the player. That being said, if in training camp he is on that top line with Aho, absolutely go out there and take him anywhere around 150 to 200. No question about it. You're going to get value from that pick. But let's talk about some big names in keeper and dynasty leagues. Let's look at defensemen specifically, Chris. There's three ones that jump out to anybody. It's Cale Makar, it's Adam Fox, and it's Quinn Hughes. Now, you can't really go wrong with either one of those, but is there one of those guys that you'd like to have more than the other ones?
Oh, yeah, it's a tough question because they're all studs. Adam Fox was amazing last year and terrific value. You know, D'Angelo was getting drafted over him in some leagues, and Adam Fox was, you know, just phenomenal. And the Rangers are certainly on the upswing. I think I got to lean with Cale Makar, though, and just, you know, the sky's the limit for him and what he did last year. And even when he came onto the scene as a rookie, we just haven't seen the best. We probably haven't seen the best from Hughes or Fox yet either, but just with the Avs loaded offensively and the ice time that Cale Makar is going to get on that top power play unit, it's really, really close between him and Fox, but I got to lean with Cale Makar. He's so good on the blue line generating offense. The fact that he can just take the puck from one end to the other, it allows the Avalanche to, you know, get clicking on offense right away. And, you know, he's just a puck mover and a driver. It starts from his own end. So I got to lean with him, but man, Fox is a pretty good get as well.
Right. And for keeper leagues, it's really interesting because I think Vancouver, you see that bounce back appeal for the upcoming season. You see integration of Nils Höglander and Vasily Podkolzin, and it gets you more excited for this next wave of the Canucks playoff success that we saw two seasons ago. So that's why I think we still included Quinn Hughes in that conversation. Adam Fox played really well last year. I had him on one of my teams, though, and he went no points in the final six games. So that was just kind of like a late season frustration point. But we have to look at the big picture for sure. And we have not yet seen the best out of the whole elite core of the New York Rangers. And I think we're going to see closer to that this year with Gerard Gallant. So I would probably rank them. Cale Makar, I agree with that, number one. And then Adam Fox right behind him, no more than a round behind Cale Makar in any fantasy format. So you could take him in the late second round, which I believe Robbie did in our first mock draft. And then Quinn Hughes, you probably get him a round or two later than that. So that's the way I would rank those three guys. But yeah, amazing crop of rookie defensemen. And you could say, not rookie defenseman, young defenseman. But then, you know, I think a big theme of young players last year was seeing how many goaltenders really burst onto the scene. And one guy who's still rookie eligible, we had a ton of fan questions about him, you know, like what's the ceiling about Spencer Knight for this upcoming season? He's the top ranked rookie. He plays on the loaded Florida Panthers, still has to deal with Bobrovsky a little bit. But if we're talking keepers or rookies and all these implications, like Spencer Knight has to be near the top of anybody's list in terms of guys to prioritize.
Yeah, before we gloat over Spencer Knight, I do just want to say I'm going to make the case for Adam Fox quickly. The reason why I would put more into his stock moving forward in a keeper in dynasty format, maybe even in a regular fantasy league too now, is just because I love the situation on the Rangers blue line for that player specifically. They have a worse defense in Colorado, no question about it. I think Vancouver improved tremendously at that position in the offseason too. But why do I like Adam Fox for that reason? Because he's got no one to pass pucks with. He's absolutely the standalone guy. He thrived in that role at Harvard. You knew that he was going to be a big time player from that moment when he was just dominating at the NCAA level. And not that Kale McCarr didn't, but just that I like fantasy standalone players. And then you get that at that position with Adam Fox. And this year, specifically with Gerard Gallant, I think you're going to see the Rangers just take that step, Pete, where you're not going to have six games at the end of the season when a player like that goes dry, right? You're going to see Gallant find him a position where he's going to capitalize, he's going to score a big goal, and you're going to reap the rewards in fantasy. And I think look at the two players, Lafreniere and Kako as well. One of them is going to break out this season. So when you kind of put that piece together, I'll give the edge to Adam Fox. And then for the Avalanche, like, they are the safest team in fantasy above and beyond. So if you want to draft a little bit more conservatively in round ones, two, and three, I would have no problem with that. You can't put up a fight to that. But I just think in that little bit of a long-term high ceiling category, I would tick off Adam Fox there over Quinn Hughes and over Kale McCarr.
Yeah. And one thing to add to that, I mean, it's the round later, which I think you just, Pete, alluded to, that you took him in the second round. So you're not spending, you know, a late first on a defenseman, depending on where you're situated in your draft. If you start near the first bit, you know, if your first five picks, you can take an elite forward. And then when it comes back, you know, Fox could be there for you, as, you know, Kale McCarr would go a little bit earlier. And I think it also depends on your league settings as well, you know, pretty much on par with each other in terms of points and power play points and goals and ice time right there, both guys, 24 minutes per game. And then if you're playing with blocks, I know it's just one category, but that could split the hairs for you, is a guy like Fox could get well over 70, 80 plus more blocks than a guy like Kale McCarr. I know the Rangers are going to be a little bit more improved, but they allow a lot of rubber, and I think that will still continue this season.
Chris, what do you think about the Rangers as a, do you think they're a definite playoff team? Like, that's the way I've been leaning ever since they hired Gallant, but of course it's a very tough division. It's going back to the conference format, so they could at worst maybe be in contention for that fifth spot out of the division. And of course there's like those couple teams we keep mentioning every year, Pittsburgh, Washington, Boston will be in the other division now, but I think they all kind of fit that mold of teams that are on at least a slight decline in recent years, or as we project them for this year. So what do you think about the Rangers' playoff chances? Are they a lock?
I don't know if they're a lock, but I really do like their squad. They're going to score some goals again. I think what Rob said, one of those kids in Lafreniere, you know, he, or Kako, one of those guys have to break out. I think it's, I'm looking for a Lafreniere. I think it's going to be him. I think we started to see it towards the end of the season. He was getting more ice time in a top six role, but I mean, Zibanejad had that very slow start last season. So if he can get off to a strong start, and you know what we expect from him a couple years ago, and then towards the later part of the season, he was the guy that you drafted early that you expected to score basically a point per game. I think if he's going off the hop, they're getting the strong goaltending from Shesterkin. I mean, he is just he's awesome. I think he's the top five fantasy goalie. I think he's going to be a guy, as long as he can stay healthy, he can keep them in every single hockey game. It's tough. I look at Pittsburgh and Washington as two teams that I do expect to decline, but I have said that before with both of those squads over the past couple of years, but the Rangers are going to be right there. They are going to be fighting, I think, for the final couple of playoff spots, and they're going to be a fun fantasy team as well, because they do play that, you know, up. It is maybe slightly different with Gallant in there, but over the past couple of years, they have played a basic, you know, kind of run and gun style where the high danger chances, they create them and they give them up, and they play in these high scoring games. And, you know, their totals are usually 6.5, even with good goaltending that they have in Shesterkin. So I don't know if they're a lock, Pete, but they're going to be right there. They're going to hang around, and they have a lot to offer from a fantasy standpoint.
Well, it's interesting you say that, and you kind of mentioned the run and gun style they play. Like, Shesterkin in that case is a little bit more of a wild card. Not that he doesn't have the talent, he does, and he's going to deliver in fantasy. But then you look at a team like the New York Islanders, who have Sorokin in a keeper in Dynasty League, and you're like, okay, that's a very safe pick. So another good one. But out of those two teams, I would add in Florida as the third and strongest team now. And I think going back to Pete's point earlier, like, Spencer Knight is clearly probably the player that we could spend the most time talking about on this this show for obvious reasons. He had a great performance when he was called up last season, 919 save percentage in the regular season, had one great game against the Lightning in the playoffs. The next one, not so good, but he is a rookie. So, you know, I think Spencer Knight's the guy in a keeper in Dynasty League that I would almost put more time and effort into drafting him and even reaching for him, maybe over a Shesterkin, over a Sorokin. Do you agree with that, Petey? Is that too bold that I like kind of Florida as the safer, not only in the run and gun style, but also in the defensive side than those two other New York teams?
It's funny, when we did our first mock draft, right, I definitely jumped the gun on him for a standard league when I took him in whatever it was, the fourth round or something. But that's what you're going to have to do. I mean, he's one of the most coveted guys. I mean, one of our colleagues actually had a question about, you know, some trade proposal, and it involves Spencer Knight. And Robbie was like, just keep Spencer Knight. Like, he's one of the handful of guys in all of fantasy keeper leagues that I would want on my team. And I'm not going to think twice about this or try to get back draft picks. Like, that's the guy you want on your team. And it brings up a great debate, like you said, Robbie, like, if you factor in those New York teams and you go Sorokin or Shesterkin versus Spencer Knight, like, is Spencer Knight far and away ahead of those guys? Because those guys are on a fast track as well. So yeah, the wealth of young goalies in this league is incredible. But I guess the only concern I would have about Florida is that Barkov becomes a UFA after this year, and then Huberto becomes a UFA after the following year. So as much as we love the roster on paper right now, we love the rookies that are still to come. Like, does Spencer Knight's value become complicated this year because of the Bobrovsky contract? And then come next year or the year after that, do they maybe lose one of their two best players, which would change the ball game a little bit for Florida long term? So that's like one of the only caveats that I would say, Chris, about the Florida Panthers. For this upcoming season, I would jump the gun on him in a standard league, and I would put him in probably my top 10 overall players in a keeper league if we're talking 25 and under.
Yeah, man, could you imagine Florida losing those two guys because they gave that ridiculous contract to Sergei Bobrovsky? It's crazy to think about. You know, Bobrovsky was, you know, you look overall at his numbers and they're not phenomenal, and he's never going to live up to that contract, but he was a goalie, you know, at home who played very well. I mean, I know it's just his home numbers, but 919 save percentage at home, only three regulation losses, you know, in 15 home games. And I thought he was actually okay against Tampa Bay. It's just, the bolts were too strong, and there was a game where he won and he looked really good, and then Quinville was juggling around all these different goaltenders and trying to get Knight in there, and Drager, who's gone now, which opens up this door for Spencer Knight. But I still think Florida has some questions defensively as well. I like Spencer Knight overall. From a keeper dynasty standpoint, I agree with you. I don't think there's any question, a top 10 goalie. I think you could maybe even make the case that he could be a top, flirt with top five from just a straight up dynasty standpoint. If you were starting a keeper league right now today, where you could only keep three or four, or if it was just a straight up dynasty where you keep your whole squad, I think you're thinking about him as a top five goalie, the future in Florida. But certainly there are some questions whether they can keep the team intact. But, you know, I thought last year they just shot themselves in the foot against the Bolts, like so many power play opportunities, odd man rushes. They played really good against Tampa Bay, but there's so many questions that they still have defensively. Ekblad was gone, but overall, I'm looking at a site like Yahoo and ESPN. I'm seeing Frederik Andersen, Peter Mrazek, Carey Price, all these goalies that are ranked higher than Spencer Knight. I would take Knight over all three of them with ease and just take that upside. But I do believe, Rob, that Bobrovsky's going to be in the way, not just because of the fact that he's getting paid 10 plus million, is that a lot of teams are going with tandems. This is a cheaper tandem that you can get. Knight, Bobrovsky a little bit later on, most likely a Florida team that wins 40 games. You know, the Islanders duo is going to be a little bit more, the price is a little bit more expensive to get those guys in Varlamov and Sorokin. So you could get Knight as a guy, Pete said you draft him in the fourth. You could probably get him in the fifth or the sixth, and then get a guy like Bobrovsky a little bit later on. I can't see a scenario where he plays 60 plus games. As good as he is and the hype that he has, he's still young. He's still a rookie. The schedules is still going to be pretty, you know, glaring for certain teams that there's no real need to get him in there and playing 60 plus games. I think Bobrovsky, it's probably maybe a 60-40 split best case for Knight. And it's just something to temper expectations.
Well, and you, it's a great point because just two seasons ago, Bobrovsky's coming off a 9 shutout season with Columbus, and he's going top 50 overall in every league while he joined the Florida Panthers. So he clearly has the ceiling to get there. He has a floor too. I mean, it's been lowered the past two seasons, but it's still there, and he has a veteran pedigree, which in the NHL always seems to trump any rookie player, no matter how good you are, unless you're Ovechkin, Crosby from the, you know, the mid 2000s, right? So there is that factor, but I think it brings up a good point too, where you look at Vasilevsky, even though he's getting a little bit older in a keeper and dynasty league, would you still invest a top 10 pick in him if you're starting today? I would say yes on that. I mean, I still look at the Tampa Bay Lightning, everything they've had to do, shuffle here, player in, player out. And I would still say that Vasilevsky is a guy to me that is still worthy of a top 10 pick in a keeper and dynasty league.
I agree with that. And you look at them for the upcoming season, like people kind of nitpick and say, oh, they lost their whole third line. Yeah, but they picked up some players and, you know, they can move up Ross Colton. They got Corey Perry. They got a better backup behind Vasilevsky. So his peripherals will remain strong, guaranteed this season if healthy. So, yeah, I think top 5-10 overall in the keeper league if you're starting from scratch. And, you know, the team itself has the big five intact, five guys in the top 30 overall of our NHL.com/fantasy rankings and four in the top 20. So this team is going to go deep again. They're going to, I mean, maybe if they played Florida again in the first round, maybe there's a chance Florida could knock them off. But other than that, they're going to go at least 2-3 rounds again. And the only teams that can knock them off in the whole league, I'll still say, are probably Florida and the Avalanche and maybe Vegas. So, like, I mean, I don't know. I just think, like, they're going to go really far again if those five guys are healthy come playoff time.
Yeah, 3-for-3. He's still you're in it to win now, right? And I think that's the one thing that I myself get caught up in sometimes in dynasty leagues or startup and keepers. You're thinking too far ahead. You want to win now. Heck, you don't even know if the league sometimes. I mean, hopefully you have great buddies that, you know, the league can stay intact for years. Pete, you're in one myself. I think we're going on year 7 or 8. I mean, that's great. But if, you know, you're just starting, you don't want to be taking all these young players just thinking too far ahead. Tampa right now is the best team in the league still, even losing that third line. They're loaded on the blue line. Maybe they give up a few more scoring chances and shots. And, you know, Vasilevsky's good enough to turn those aside most times. He's still going to give you really solid numbers, even if his goals against average jumps up a little bit. Maybe the save percentage also jumps up in a positive way and the goals against average goes in a negative way. But the wins are going to be there. He's still going to be a guy that I think plays well over 65% of the games. You know, I thought last year, with the schedule being so different and Tampa just locked in, that they would maybe ease Vasilevsky off a little bit. Maybe they couldn't trust, what is it, Curtis McElhinney? Maybe they couldn't trust him. I think that's fair. Now you get a better backup in Brian Elliott. Maybe the games come down a little bit, but this is still a guy that Cooper wants to ride, and why not? He is an unbelievable goalie. He's a first round pick in a dynasty startup at a keeper league, and he's just for sure locked in as the number one overall goalie.
And he just turned 27 in July. So I don't think I view players in keeper and dynasty leagues any different until they hit that big 3-0, which even in the NHL nowadays doesn't seem to say much about a decline in performance as we've been seeing lately with some of these goaltenders specifically. But I think if you are in this setting and you're looking for a goalie that you might want to invest in this year, you could look at Jeremy Swayman for the Boston Bruins. He's going to be available. I don't think many people are going to have previously kept him if they had to pick only four keepers or had a point system or whatever. So that's a guy that I'd go after. Now, Pete, I don't know how much stock you'd be willing to put in him yet. I know that this Boston team, their top forwards in Marchand and Bergeron are getting older, but they still have Pasternak, who's young and is going to score 50 goals a couple more times in his career. So I don't know how you kind of view this team, which is kind of half young guns and half older guys, but I like Swayman a lot to kind of carry the torch and maybe even take over the throne from Tuukka Rask as early as this season.
Right. I think that it's kind of, I don't, maybe not a blessing in disguise, but close to it. I mean, they're going to miss Krejci. They're going to miss Tuukka Rask, but it kind of changes the guard a little bit in Boston. We're going to find out who's going to be their 2C. Is it going to be Studnicka, the rookie still eligible? Is it going to be Charlie Coyle? The two good options as sleepers, two young players And Coyle has had a 56-point season in the past, so keep that in the back of your mind. Then for the goaltending, it's like Rask has always been a stalwart, has always been reliable, regular season and playoffs, even though he's never won the cup as the starter. But now they invested in Ullmark, but they also have Swayman, who led the entire NHL in save percentage minimum 10 games last year, 945. So based on that, I wouldn't say it's like a full-on Ullmark time in Boston. I like Ullmark. I like him as a stopgap for the next 2 years to perform at a high level. But Swayman, I feel like, is the future starter if we're talking 4 or 5 years from now. So I see that eventually progressing towards Swayman if we're talking about longer term leagues. So yeah, Ullmark will be drafted higher. He'll be drafted probably a little ahead or a little behind the top 100 overall in standard leagues. But I would invest in Swayman as a goalie 3 in fantasy and feel comfortable in doing so. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, he was very impressive. We'll say that he's very impressive. I think that they gave, you know, Boston gives that money to Ullmark, who I think is a really good goalie. I mean, if this guy can get a 917 save percentage with that Sabre squad, are you kidding me? And then he's going to leave Buffalo, which is just such a dysfunctional organization. And they just couldn't do anything defensively, offensively, all the pucks inside their end numerous times. He's going to go to Boston and he's going to feel pretty good about himself. So I think it could be a 1-2 punch. You know, we're talking dynasty long-term keeper. I think Swayman is one of those guys that you could get a little bit later. Definitely Ullmark is going to go ahead of him in redraft leagues, and I think he should. But I think you're seeing across the league, and this is why we like Vasilevskiy so much. I mean, yes, he's a great goalie, but I just mentioned, you know, the playing time. There's going to be a lot of tandems in the league moving forward, and I think that's kind of the new age. Like, if you have a great goal, you're going to ride him, but you're seeing a lot of teams go with the 1-2 punch. Let's ride the hot hand. Let's see how much we can get. These goalies not playing back-to-backs. Swayman goes on a bit of a run. Maybe he gets the net for a couple weeks. Ullmark is fantastic. Maybe he gets it, or maybe they go 50-50. It's very possible. But I think Ullmark I'm very interested in him. He's cheap. He's not going to cost a whole lot. I think he's going to have upside to be a top 15 goalie with the Bruins, and he's getting drafted roughly as like a borderline top 25 goalie. So I think Swayman long-term, but Ullmark is going to be a guy that I'm interested in here right off the hop. I mean, they spent some money on him. And like I said, I think he's what he did in Buffalo over the past couple of years is very impressive in my opinion.
Well, we should talk a little bit about Buffalo. It is a keeper and dynasty show, and we've gotten two questions specifically. A lot about Eichel, one about Dahlin, which I think is great. From D-Klatz on Instagram, we have the one about Eichel. Do I keep Eichel? And then the one about Dahlin is from DSKZB, how to deal with Dahlin in keeper leagues. I think when you look at Eichel specifically, you have to keep the player. Even if he's going to miss time this year in a keeper league, he just has far too much upside and value, no matter whether he remains with the Sabres or best case scenario ends up, you know, as a New York Ranger, something like that, super high end, 100 plus point potential. For Dahlin though, guys, I hate to be the Debbie Downer here. He was billed as the next, you know, Nicholas Lindstrom in his draft year. Playing in Buffalo as a defenseman, logging 20 plus minutes a night, it's not going to do well for anybody's stats. But I just lost a little intrigue in the player because of the overall team situation. So I would say maybe start to look for other options than Dahlin. But for Eichel, you've got to keep him.
Agreed on Eichel. I mean, if he goes to another team, it's kind of the escape route from that situation. Whereas Dahlin, still at the moment, unsigned RFA, but you expect Dahlin to be in Buffalo for at least a couple more years. But if Eichel goes to the right place, even if he misses the beginning of the season, whether he has surgery or not, or misses some time or not, like, he's going to be in a much better situation, pretty much going anywhere else. So yeah, definitely. I thought a really good debate was in Robbie's keeper rankings, which will be out on NHL.com/fantasy this week. It was Eichel versus Jack Hughes, and we were leaning Jack Hughes right now, with the Devils kind of having a better trajectory than the Sabres and just given all the concerns with Eichel right now. But generally speaking, I would still say that Eichel should be viewed in the upper echelon of keeper league assets when you think about the player and dismiss everything else around him. You hope that stuff solves itself, whereas Dahlin, it's like it seems like maybe only a year or two ago we had him in the top 15 overall keeper league assets. And unfortunately, I don't know if there's going to be a time ahead, at least as long as he's on the Sabres, where he will be back in that conversation anytime soon.
Yeah, it's too bad because he's really good. I mean, 44 points in his rookie season, and he followed up with 40 and 59. Last year was just a down year for him and, you know, everyone in Buffalo. You're playing with plus minus. I mean, you shouldn't anyways, but if you do, I mean, he's just going to be a guy that absolutely crushes you. Minus 36 last year, minus 56 over the course of his career. So it's just going to be one of those, like, oh, man, I lose a category basically every week rolling this guy out on the Sabres. I think he could be a decent buy low in a dynasty league, but I'm not interested at all. And I think the same could be said for Jack Eichel. I think now in a dynasty league and a keeper league is the opportunity to go and acquire this guy because there's so many question marks surrounding his health. Is he going to be a member of the Sabres? Where is he going to go? Is he going to fit in? He probably fit in basically with any other team in the entire National Hockey League. But I'm with you. I would like to know the other options. I think, again, I said that I live in the moment when it comes to keeper leagues and dynasty leagues, and it's nice to have a guy like Eichel on your squad, but it could be a complete headache. It was last year. Last year was a complete headache. You had this guy on your squad. If you drafted him in redraft leagues towards the end of the season, it was a pain. It may have cost you. So I'd like to know what other options you know that person had. If there's any penalty, if there's no penalty, then fine. You keep Eichel. But if it's costing you even a second round pick, as good as he is and the upside that he has to be a top five fantasy player, I don't know. I'd maybe think about my other options. But overall, I think now is the time to knock on the door of the owner, whoever has Eichel in dynasty and keeper leagues, just to see what you could get, because, you know, the window is to buy is open and his stock is pretty low right now.
The best situation to be in a keeper league is to be when the season's done, you have your four guys pretty much locked and loaded already. You know who you're going to keep. And Petey and I have that in a joint keeper team where Vasilevsky's that guy, Barkov's that guy, Braden Point's that guy, right? Like, we have that situation. Now, when you look at younger players and especially rookies, they have way high ceilings. We know that, but you want to have the team security as well. And I think that's what we're going to see this season with teams like the Anaheim Ducks, who have Trevor Zegras and Jamie Drysdale as rookies, both probably going to have big time years, but the team still isn't very good. Right. And then you have other players like Cole Caulfield, which is another one we got a ton of questions about on Instagram, rookie, but better team situation. So Chris, I guess I'll ask you specifically, you know, you saw Cole Caulfield, he looked pretty good in his early showings. Do you really feel secure about him in Montreal's situation, even though they don't really have the premier center outside of Nick Suzuki?
Yeah, I do. I think what we can take away from Cole Caulfield is that we saw him last year, where other players like Alexis Lafreniere, even Jack Hughes, like, these guys hadn't lived up to their redraft value in fantasy hockey. We hadn't seen them and they struggled right out of the gate. Well, Cole Caulfield, I mean, across all the levels, I mean, 30 goals in 31 games with Wisconsin, Hobie Baker winner. He scored in the AHL in a very small sample size. He scored in the NHL when, you know, games really mattered for the Canadiens. And then he did it on the big stage against the opposing team's best players, against Vegas, playing against Alex Pietrangelo, playing against Braden McNabb. Like, I know he's both of those defensemen. It's weird to say Pietrangelo and McNabb in the same sentence. But he did it on the big stage and he's got a role. And Rob, you just talked about it earlier when you're trying to identify the upside of some of these players, is they have a role. And how key is that to find this role? With Cole Caulfield, he's going to play in the top six. I think he's going to start right next to Nick Suzuki. And Suzuki, I mean, you can have questions if you want about whether he can be a number one center for you or not, but I think he passed the test. The past couple of years, he passed the test in the playoffs. I mean, expected goals last year in the playoffs was number one in the NHL for Suzuki, ahead of Nikita Kucherov. And for Cole Caulfield, I mean, the 20 points in the 20 playoff games, what he did, and I think that's why I said Braden McNabb, what he did on that one goal when there was a pass across the ice and he flicked it over McNabb, and then he beat him with the speed, and then he beat Leonard, that's a goal scorer's goal. And I know last year was very different, and even the year before that was different. There weren't a lot of guys who scored 30. I think we can project 30, 20 for sure, and there's not a lot of 30 goal scorers in the league. And Caulfield is probably going to be one of those guys who loves to shoot the puck and he likes to score. Like, I just got some numbers because I knew you guys are going to bring them up. But 9.46 shots per 60 last year in the playoffs was 11th. 10.07 scoring chances was 8th ahead of Nathan MacKinnon. And 1.58 assists per 60 was inside the top 12 as well. Pretty good numbers for just a kid who's very small and was just learning and adapting to the best of the best against the best teams, the Bolts, Vegas, and Toronto, not just random regular season games. He showed it on the big stage. So he's going to have a role. He's going to get power play time. He loves to shoot the puck. He led playoffs, you know, hitting the post too. I mean, he had six posts. He hit the post in his very first shot and his very first shift in the playoffs. So he's going to have a role like some of these other rookies may not have. Zegras is going to have a role too, but as you mentioned, Rob, the offense around him is not going to be the same. He's going to have a top six role for sure, even if he jumps down on the second line, Caulfield, that is, and he's going to be on that first power play unit. I don't want to overdraft him. He is favored to win the Calder at 200. Like, I'm not thinking about him in the fifth or sixth round. He's more of a seventh or eighth round guy. League dependent, he's not going to give you a lot of hits. He probably won't have a ton of assists, but I think that 25 goals is reasonable to expect from him.
I agree. That's a very reasonable thing. 25 plus goals. 30 might be a little high, but he has the chance to do that because he's playing with Toffoli and Suzuki like he did in the playoffs. I thought it was really telling that he got thrown into the fire late in the regular season, was not playing on a line that good, was still producing, and then 12 points in 20 games, led all rookies, 3 overtime points in the postseason, most in NHL history in a single postseason by a rookie. So, and he's still rookie eligible for the upcoming season, like we said. So yeah, Cole Caulfield definitely has, if it's a points only league, you could maybe even put him as the highest ranked rookie player for the upcoming year. We have Spencer Knight ahead of him, just because of the opportunity for such a strong team in Florida and a more scarce position at goaltender. But really, I mean, Cole Caulfield's ceiling is just as high as any other rookie on the board this year. And then Robbie mentioned Trevor Zegras. I thought it was interesting that in our keeper rankings, we had Zegras ahead of Cole Caulfield, whereas for the standard league upcoming season, we have Caulfield ahead of Zegras. So it's an interesting debate. Everybody could clamor about it on Twitter. But it's going to be two players for the U.S., you know, compared to each other for a long, long time in this league this year and also many years to come.
Well, yeah, as USA Hockey fans, this is a great problem for us to have. I'll have the debate any day, any minute of any day. I will go into it. I will say this year, absolutely, Cole Caulfield is a player you want to prioritize. I took him in a regular mock draft in round 7, which I felt was a little high at the time. But then, you know, if you do have 30 goals from a player you get in round 7, you're going to get, you know, some value there. So I will say Trevor Zegras, though, in a keeper and dynasty league, I like his long-term outlook better than Cole Caulfield's. This is a player that it reminds me a lot of a young Nicholas Backstrom, where every time he's on the ice, he's doing something that no other player is capable of doing. He has that kind of skill level. You saw it at the World Junior Tournament. He just absolutely dominated the tournament. Every shift, he made an impact. And I think when you look at Anaheim, yeah, they're not going to blow you away with their talent, but they still have guys like Ricky Racks. They still have guys like interesting wings. And then defenseman-wise, now with Jamie Drysdale, who's, again, he's going to be a top point producer at the defenseman position. It's not maybe going to happen this season because you're going to have the caveat of his minus probably being south of minus 10, I would project right now with the Ducks, but you're still going to have a team that has John Gibson, the security of one of the better goalies in the NHL. You're going to have Zegras, who's going to have a minimum of 50 points this year. And then the next year beyond that, that's where I would look at the Anaheims, the LAs, to start really making their grip a little bit tighter out west and being those premier teams. So those are things that you should factor in when you're looking at keeper and dynasty players, but definitely you still want that air of win now. I need the players that's going to produce right away. So that's kind of how I would answer that question, and really how I would think about a lot of these debates, you know, have a perfect blend of future plus win right now.
Yeah, you said that perfectly. I think Zegras is definitely the guy from a long-term, if you're, again, a dynasty startup, you should draft Zegras ahead of Cole Caulfield, more of an all-around player, a terrific passer, playmaker as well. And yeah, he's unbelievable in the World Juniors and playing with San Diego in the AHL too. He was great. But again, for Caulfield, it's just the line mates that he has. And Suzuki did it as well in the playoffs. I mean, 16 points in 22 playoff games. So he's going to be with Toffoli. I don't think that they ever split up Suzuki and Caulfield. I think at times maybe they do, and that would be just maybe trying to generate something offensively. They're going through something in Montreal where they're not scoring any goals, but I think for the most part he's linked to a guy like Suzuki, where Zegras is not really linked to. Yeah, they have some decent players there, but I don't think that the upside is quite as high in a redraft league right now. But he's also going later, much later Zegras than Cole Caulfield. So not that you should cross him off your list. He's a guy I think that, you know, even in a redraft league and a late round flyer is decent. I like the fact that he shot the puck a little bit more towards the end, starting to play with a little bit more confidence. He started so slow in Anaheim. Everybody was waiting for the goals. Like, when's that goal going to come? I mean, he's highly touted and he scored at every single level. So you just expect that they would just come naturally. And it took a little bit for him to get going, but as soon as he did, you could start to see the confidence. The ice time starts to increase. You like the fact that both of these kids are going to get top power play time as well, so that's a plus.
13 points in 24 games for Trevor Zegras in the NHL. That's better than I remembered it being, and also a plus six. And that's a tough thing to do when you're on Anaheim. And I think we could all agree the way that Trevor Zegras was deployed on the Ducks was questionable at times. Like, they made him a healthy scratch, then I think they sent him back down. It was kind of bizarre. I mean, if it's me, it's the Anaheim Ducks, it's Zegras on top line in power play one with Jamie Drysdale, and just seeing what those guys can do in accelerating your rebuild, because outside of those guys, I think it's been a tad underwhelming for the Sam Steeles and Troy Terrys. And I really like Comtois. I think Comtois is on our deep sleeper list and could return value even in a standard league because he covers hits. So all of a sudden, and then you factor in John Gibson, who's kind of been on all these losing teams, and he's almost an afterthought in standard fantasy leagues anymore. But if those guys provide a spark, Anaheim's a bit more competitive in that favorable Pacific division. Maybe Anaheim could be better than the Kraken. Maybe they could be better than the LA Kings. I mean, those type of things are not too far-fetched. And if that happens, they'll be in the playoff hunt.
I think a perfect example of this debate in a nutshell was asked by Bergard on Instagram. Would you rather have Tim Stützle of the Ottawa Senators or Tara Vinen of the Carolina Hurricanes? And you could answer that, say Tara Vinen's the obvious choice because they're kind of in win now mode and they're a much better team at the present moment. But if I'm in a keeper in Dynasty League and I'm passing up Timmy Stützle, I don't think I'm playing the league right.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I've been talking a lot about on this show about win now. And I think the better player right now is probably TiVo. Considering he's linked to Aho most times, I mean, 90% of the times over the past couple of years, he's been playing with Aho. But I think, you know, looking long term, and it's not like he had a down year as a rookie. He went through lulls, and that's going to happen with a lot of these rookie forwards. That's why I think most times in a redraft league, it's kind of better to pass on some of these rookies where I think they get overdrafted. But Stützle showed it last season. The Senators are going to be good. They have a lot of nice young pieces. So I think I would lean with you, Rob. I would go that way as well.
Look at Ottawa. I mean, I was looking at jotting down some teams, of course, teams like Detroit, the Kings, the Ducks. Those are teams that come to mind as teams that we look at differently, more favorably in longer term formats like Keeper and Dynasty. But maybe at the top of that list is Ottawa, who may have some trouble competing for a playoff spot in such a tough division with Tampa, Toronto, Boston, Florida, Montreal this year. But could they play spoiler like they did last year? Could they be even better than they were last year? Absolutely. Who has a better 1-2 punch in a keeper dynasty format from a specific team than Ottawa does, with Brady Tkachuk on one line and Tim Stützle on the other? Then factor in Josh Norris, factor in Shabbat, who we know is a proven fantasy commodity from years past. Batherson just got a new long-term deal. He's worth the money, in my opinion. There's Brännström, there's Shane Pinto, there's Formenton, there's Jake Sanderson, there's Philip Gustafson, the young goalie. I mean, that is like 10 players I just rattled off that are going to make an impact as early as this season, and certainly by next season or the year after that. So Ottawa maybe could be on that fast track from rebuild. They went to the full-fledged rebuild, right, when they traded Carlson and Mark Stone and all these guys, but now they're reaping the rewards of that. They're going to be a really good team really quickly, maybe even as early as this year.
What about guys like Podkolzin and Byfield, who are kind of entering this like rookie sleepers category where we're clamoring about Caulfield and Zegras and this, that, and the other, and Swayman. But now the second level, I think you still are going to have some valuable guys. Byfield, I guess, guys, is the one that's interesting to me because he has the talent, he has the draft stock that he could exceed, 50 points, but he doesn't really have the lineup security maybe. So Podkolzin, I'd say I might be a little bit more intrigued by it because he plays on the wing. We know Vancouver has good centers. Do you guys have a strong feeling one way or the other there?
I feel that from a dynasty standpoint, and a keeper, like long term, out of all these guys we're talking about, like he's probably my favorite. I think he's an unbelievable player. But I mean, they went out and acquired Philip Deneau. They still got Anže Kopitar there. So how much ice time is he going to get playing in a third line role? Yeah, he'll get softer matchups. I suppose that's great. He's never going to go up against, you know, the opposing team's best. But how much power play time is he going to get? Can he get on that second unit? I think probably even last year in just what was a small sample size, 15 minutes per game is not really ideal when you bring in a guy like Philip Deneau and you pay him that money and you know what, you know, his role is going to be with him and Kopitar as the one and the two. So I could temper expectations a little bit from a redraft standpoint, but Podkolzin, you know, he could show up in a top six. I'd liked him a little bit more, just like with the offseason moves before they were made, before Deneau came in there, I thought, you know, Byfield, yes. And before Connor Garland, I thought, you know, Podkolzin, yes, you know, coming over from the KHL. You know, it was a 35 games, only 11 points, but he did have 11 points in 16 playoff games, and he played in a limited role. Like, he wasn't a guy who was getting 20 minutes per game. He led his team in the playoffs in the KHL. He's one of those guys who could be, you know, an asset in bangers leagues, like hits and blocks. But I see him as playing maybe on the third line. Like, I don't think he ever gets into the top six in year one. So it may take a little bit of time. Again, from a redraft standpoint, probably not. But I'm shooting for the upside in a keeper in a dynasty league. Even with Deneau on the squad in LA, I would shoot for the upside with Byfield.
I think there's a little bit more flash to Podkolzin for the short term. If you're looking for a dark horse Calder pick, that could just explode. I know that he's younger than Panarin was when he came in and led all rookies in the offensive categories. He's younger than Kaprizov, who won the Calder last year, who also came from Russia. He doesn't have same pedigree as those type of guys at performing at a professional level in Russia, but certainly Podkolzin has the raw potential where if he's there with Pedersen or if he's there with Bo Horvat at even strength alone, he could put up some monster numbers and maybe even be up there with Zegras and Caulfield among even strength scoring, could have more even strength points than those guys. That's his ceiling. So yeah, Podkolzin's really exciting. Another dark horse Calder guy who's still eligible by a thread, by a hair, by one game is Kaapo Kähkönen for the Minnesota Wild. So people might be shocked to see that he's still rookie eligible, but if you're placing bets anywhere and you see Kähkönen on there, this is a guy that had a 9-game winning streak as a rookie last year, and he'll be pushing Cam Talbot for playing time once again this season, I think, with a clean slate for Minnesota. But yeah, there are so many guys deeper down the line we haven't even talked about, right? Bowen Byram for the Avalanche. That's another guy that could be one of the best rookie defensemen for the upcoming season.
I agree with that. I mean, I think it's just when you look at the situations, though, the logjam is just so big in Colorado with defensemen that are all so good. Like Devon Taves could be as good as Bowen Byram ceiling wise, but you know, playing behind Kel McCarr, you're not going to get that return. I think it's a good point though, that there's a lot of these young guys that are super intriguing. Like I'll throw out two more names, Connor McMichael of the Washington Capitals. This kid is absolutely immensely talented. He had 27 points in 33 AHL games last season. I'm just going to throw out comparisons here. Byfield had 20 and 32. Kyliev is another player like 31 and 40. McMichael's he might be the best player out of that bunch. The problem though is how are you going to carve out a role for him when you've got Backstrom and Kuznetsov as your top two centers? You just have to think about these things when you're anteing up. And then Kyliev, who could be LA's top goal scorer one day, you know, you have to look at them. And again, you know, Chris, you said it, like they had a lot of offseason moves to better the team right now. But what does that mean for all those rookies that are kind of knocking on the door for playing time? That's something you're going to have to wait until training camp to really invest in some of these guys in the late rounds of either your standard drafts or in the earlier rounds of your keeper and dynasty formats.
Yeah, I mean, Michael's 30-1. He's a great long shot to win the Calder, but you're right. There's some reports out of Washington that they've, you know, tried to move on from Kuznetsov and move him, but there's been some off-ice stuff and, you know, his contract is not cheap and his play hasn't been great over the past couple of years since they won the Cup. I mean, he was phenomenal in the playoffs, but the past couple of years has been underwhelming, like really from a fantasy standpoint and just an overall general, you know, standpoint. There was times where he was playing in the third line role for Washington last year. You know, there's two other guys that I'll throw out there from Minnesota. Like Matthew Boldy and Marco Rossi. Minnesota needs a, like, Kaprizov needs a center. He needs a number one center. And Marco Rossi, I think, is that guy who really didn't play last year, dealt with some COVID stuff, 39 goals, 120 points in 56 games in the OHL in 2019. And when you look at Minnesota and the season that Kaprizov had playing with Zuccarello at times, there really wasn't a legit center on that team who could, you know, skate with Kaprizov and even come close to the skill level that he has. Now, Rossi, maybe that's a little unfair to throw him in there right away, but I think there's an opportunity for this guy to play this season, whether it's on the first line or maybe just inside the top six or getting power play time. He's a guy that I think will go probably undrafted in redraft leagues. And if he does make the squad out of the camp, or if he comes up as a call-up, he's going to be a hot waiver wire pickup. And I think he's a great stash, and I think he's somebody to consider in dynasty leagues as well.
I think he has the platform, like you said, Chris, to maybe be in the Calder top three when it's all said and done. Like, that's the type of ceiling for Rossi. And yeah, we're glad he's healthy after those complications last year from COVID. And he didn't even play at any level last year. So now he's coming back in. He's healthy. He's going to be motivated. Minnesota, a sneaky stealth team on the young players front, especially after the Calder winner, Kaprizov, Kakinen, like I mentioned, Rossi, Boldy, Kalen Addison, who they got from Pittsburgh in that Zucker trade a couple years ago. He has an enormous upside, and Minnesota still stacked on defense, even after buying out Ryan Suter. They added Goligoski, they got Addison, they got the usual guys plugging in that blue line, Brodin, Dumba, you know, Spurgeon. They're loaded. So Minnesota was really competitive in, you know, against two of the best teams in the whole NHL last year in Colorado and Vegas. Now integrate more youth, maybe get your bona fide number one center. And you're talking about them not only replicating what they did last year, which we have some concerns about, but maybe even building off it.
Well, and if you have three dark horse Calder candidates on one team, I mean, you think you're pretty well positioned for the future,
yes.
Whether all three of those guys hit their ceiling or not. Even if one of them is only half the player they were projected to be, that's a full-time NHL player. And now if you're sitting in Seattle's shoes right now, who obviously has no one intriguing from a keeper and dynasty standpoint, they will one day, just not yet, unless you're drafting Berniers or something, which is way too early. But if you have Seattle right now, obviously that's real hockey, not fantasy, and you pass on a guy in Kakinen that potentially wins the Calder this year, maybe Grubauer doesn't pan out or he gets injured, you're going to be sitting there scratching your head thinking, what were we doing on that one? So I think there's a lot more at stake here just than keeper and dynasty rankings. This all has implications too, and I think Seattle, maybe looking back on that one, is going to have to question that decision.
Yeah, it was surprising. That was one of the, I mean, there were a lot of surprising, I think, picks, in my opinion, from Seattle. But that was one of them. I thought, well, I mean, why not? You know, what he played so well when Cam Talbot missed time that I think I came on this show with you guys and we were talking about all the great young rookies and we had the conversation between him and Nedeljkovic and which one you'd rather have the rest of the way. And I, as much as I liked Cam Talbot and he's got a ton of experience, he played really well before the injury. And I think he missed some time with COVID as well. That I thought that the job was just going to be Kakinen. It's like, that's it. Like, he won it. Like, there was a stretch where the Wild, I believe they won 12 straight games. They were one of the hottest teams in the league. He wasn't losing any games and his numbers were phenomenal. And then they went right back to Cam Talbot. So I was pretty shocked that Seattle didn't go that route and take the nice young goalie. But, you know, nothing against Grubauer, but I would have taken the young, the kid in Kakinen. But it's just another strong duo, right? We like the Wild. Get some young pieces. I don't think they're sold down the middle. I think that's why you're, you know, because of some of the young pieces they have, I think that's why Eichel's been linked to them and some trade rumors that maybe they part with a couple of those young pieces and then they have an Eichel on that squad, which would really put them over the top right now. But this is another strong duo. And I think that's been the trend. Both of you guys have been following fantasy hockey for a while. Pete, I've been talking to you for years about fantasy hockey. You know, there's a lot of tandems around the league and that's got to be one of the best in Minnesota between Kakinen and Talbot.
No doubt they're a top five tandem for the upcoming season. I think we have them slotted in even ahead of the Boston tandem of Swayman and Ullmark. So that shows how much we respect what that tandem did last year, especially when one guy was out or the other one's role diminished. So yeah, running, just finishing up the top 13 rookies, 13 rookies in our top 250 right now. So we mentioned a lot of these guys already. Spencer Knight, 1, Caulfield, 2, Swayman, 3, Zegras, 4, Kokkonen, 5. Then we got Drysdale, Podkolzin, Byram, Byfield, and Marco Rossi rounding out the top 10. 3 other guys, Vitali Kravtsov, New York Rangers, maybe a dark horse to play top line or first power play or second line after Buchnevich was traded under the new regime with Gerard Gallant. Alex Newhook, I think we liked what we saw on a per 60 basis from him, regular season and postseason. I was surprised that Coach Bednar did not give him a bigger role when their season was on the line in some of those later games, considering how he was performing on the fourth line, playing like 6 minutes a game. So maybe a bigger role for Newhook to give the Avs a little bit of a wrinkle. And then Mo Sider for the Detroit Red Wings. And you mentioned Nedeljkovic. That's one last team I wanted to touch on. If you're looking at with Sider, Nedeljkovic, Jacob Vrana, Lucas Raymond for the Detroit Red Wings, that has to be a team in a very tough division, but one that you look at a lot differently if you're talking keeper leagues, guys.
Yeah, no, I think Detroit fits that mold better than Anaheim does of teams that are knocking on the door. I think Detroit's going to take that step forward this year. They have, in my opinion, the best leadership front office-wise in the entire NHL, so we'll see something like that. I do want to give Chris one last question here to close out the show. This one made me laugh, I'm not going to lie. Ben RK on Instagram asked, keep McKinnon and Kucherov or McKinnon and Rantanen? And I just want to say this, this is the biggest problem you have for a keeper in Dynasty League, you are playing at the highest level in fantasy hockey, period.
Yeah, you're doing all right. It must be nice to have those options. I know you want to probably have the Av stack, and that's probably in the back of his mind to have, a Rantanen and a Nate, but I would lean with Cooch and Nate. But yeah, you have two top three players, top five, worst case, right? If, I think Cooch is still a top three fantasy hockey player. Like, he's right there with McDavid, and you could make the case maybe you want to go Matthews out of him, but I think Kucherov is going to have more points. He's definitely a guy that I would peg for 100 points. But yeah, it must be nice to have those options. I like the Sider call, Pete. I don't know from a fantasy hockey standpoint, maybe in year one, but he's going to get a top four role right away. I would believe that maybe Letty gets some PP time, Hronek gets some PP time, but a big body. I think Yzerman, a lot of people question Yzerman when he made that pick, but Rob, to your point, who would you rather have? I mean, there's not a lot of guys I'd rather have in the front office than Stevie Y, and what he's been able to do already in a very small sample, turning around Detroit and what he did with Tampa Bay. So, Mort Sider is going to be a guy that I think, hits. He's a big boy, and blocking shots. The ice time is going to be there on a team that's on the rise, but still another team that's going to give up a lot. So he could be an asset for those playing in banger leagues with hits and blocks.
And I could see Nedeljkovic having like a 915 save percentage, even though that some of those games could be a wreck at times. But if Dylan Larkin's healthy, this is a guy a couple years ago produced near a point per game over 80 game season, So I think people forget in terms of bounce back appeal how high Dylan Larkin's immediate ceiling still is. And he'll be playing with Jacob Vrana, one of the best even strength goal scorers in the NHL over the past 3-4 seasons. Then you remember they have like Valeno, they have still Fabry and Zadina. So some of those guys are sneaky good scorers. And if they could all stay healthy, they could be in the similar conversation as Ottawa, where they take a big step in their rebuild. Hang and roll with the punches against some of these other high-powered offenses in the Atlantic Division.
Yeah, no doubt about that for Detroit. I like the Nedeljkovic call too. I think you're still going to get some value there. And if you're in a keeper format, invest now before he has a great season, and then you're never going to be able to get this player again. Chris, thank you so much for joining us today at Chris Meany on Twitter. Definitely well worth the follow for all your fantasy sports outside of hockey too. So Chris, always a pleasure. Thank you for coming on with us today.
Yeah, guys, a blast, an absolute blast. Hopefully we can do it again, and just appreciate it. And like I said earlier, man, it got here pretty quick. Camps open up real soon. We're going to see some preseason hockey, in a couple weeks. So in a few weeks rather, but it's always a pleasure to talk to you guys and to break down some of these rookies, because there's a lot of intriguing names out there. There's no question. Thanks a lot.
So Chris does a great job for FTN Network, FTN Bets and Fantasy, all the handles out there. You should follow him, DFS handle as well. So Chris, what's been going on before we wrap on the FTN Network? I know you're now a stakeholder there, right? And you're doing some big content over there covering multiple sports right now.
Yeah, it's busy. It's my favorite time of the year. You know, you got baseball still happening. Playoffs will be soon. NFL, this is NFL week. We got on Thursday will be the opening week, and then week one here over the weekend. And then as we talk about hockey is kind of just getting underway, and then the NBA. So there's lots happening over at FTN. We have betting packages available. If you're looking to be part of the FTN fam, you can use the promo code MEANY, FTNFantasy.com/pricing. And if you get like an NFL betting package, you'll have also NHL picks, MLB picks, NBA, all the picks. And we got a lot of sharp people giving some advice over at FTN. But yeah, it's just rolling every day on Mean Streets. I'm not quite on the same page with you guys. My rankings are not out yet. You guys are studs. You're all over it. But I will have rankings over at FTNFantasy.com within the next week and a half or so. Rankings will be up there. Sleepers, busts, all that good stuff. We'll be doing some team previews, a free show on Mean Streets as well, Monday to Friday, every day at noon Eastern. So lots happening over at FTN. I appreciate you guys plugging it.
Good stuff from Chris, and please leave us a 5-star review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or any format. If you're watching on YouTube, leave us a like, leave us a comment. We try to get to all of those, and we will see you all again next week.